This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. Jason Mackey here with you until 10:35. Thanks so much for finding us. Let's go out to the Fan Hotline, where we find former Pirates pitcher and current Pirates broadcaster Stephen Brault. Want to talk about all things Buccos. Stephen, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's going great, Jason. You know, long-time listener, first-time caller. So glad you could have me on the show.
I was wondering how long it would take for you to be not serious in about 2 seconds. Nice.
Yeah,
work.
About 2 seconds. You know, I used to listen to radio shows all the time growing up. It's like what I did in the mornings before I went to school. So I always wanted to say that. So it's the first time I've ever actually said that on a radio show.
Have you ever been a caller on a radio show? I mean, technically we called you, but have you ever called into a radio show?
Yeah, one time I did. I actually am one for one. I won 4 tickets to a water park near my house when I was like 16 or 17 years old on a radio show. And so I decided I'm never going to do it again because I want to keep that perfect record, you know?
That's good. And I definitely don't have any water park tickets to give you.
Well, then what's the point?
I can give you directions to Sandcastle. That's about all I got. All right, man. So I appreciate you hopping on with me. Good discussion. And I'm sorry, you would probably love to be on the road going back to San Diego, but you are in Pittsburgh, correct?
I am in Pittsburgh, yes. I actually did get to go to one of the games the Pirates played against the Padres last year in San Diego because I was in L.A. for the series before that and then followed the team to San Diego with my parents. Man, love watching games there. Didn't get, you know, I haven't gotten to do it very much as an adult other than when we were playing there. So it's nice to have a different experience, but I think we got a good series coming up. I really do.
I know. The Pirates are in a pretty good, interesting place. I'm encouraged by it. What did you make of the Arizona series and where we find the Buccos right now? What did you like seeing that?
So there's a few things that I really liked about that. One, you know, you go in, you play a team like the Diamondbacks who have, obviously, they've had their struggles this year, but they're still a great offensive team, and you're able to keep them down enough to make sure that the offense got some time. But it's been fun to watch the offense actually start to move a little bit, you know, obviously a really slow start to it's getting to see these guys kind of start to come through. Canario, Davis, you know, obviously we can talk about Paul Skeens forever, but it's the extra guys, right? The guys who fill out the lineup. They're going to be the guys that if this team is going to play well, they're going to have to play well. So it's nice to see that happening.
Yeah, and Henry Davis is one of those guys I wanted to ask you about specifically, Stephen. My assumption from the outside was that he has to catch more going forward, right? I mean, how would you play this with him? What do you sort of expect?
You know, it's tough. So this is one of those situations where the Pirates almost got themselves, you know, you always talk about starting pitching has always been the, well, you have too many options. Now it seems like catching has become the you have too many options situation on the Pirates, which is a good problem to have, obviously, because you got Joey Bart going on the IL, concussion protocol, that's at least a week. So now, I mean, Henry Davis is going to have time to play every day. And the way he's been playing, I agree. It's hard to imagine not putting him in the lineup. But you kind of stuck because you got, what are you going to do with Bart when he comes back? I mean, he's been one of your more consistent hitters. But then Kutch has been one of your more consistent hitters, and he's got a DH. So it kind of backs you into a corner a little bit, unfortunately, to get all those guys in the lineup as much as possible. So it's a good problem to have, but, you know, it is it will be interesting to see how Henry and Bart are deployed if Henry keeps hitting the way he is.
Did you have any overlap with Henry? Because I know your last year with the Pirates was 21. He was drafted in 21. I don't know why the ships would have passed, but did you have any sort of meaningful interaction with him?
No, I've only talked to Henry since becoming part of the dark side, you know, the media over here. I never got to meet him before when I was still playing. I think I may have met him, you know, but it wasn't anything that I got to know him at all.
Yeah. Okay. So the Pirates are 9-10 under Donnie Kelly, Steven. They've won 6 of 9. Playing some better ball. I think they've shown some fight late in games. I think we're seeing some impact that Donnie has had. What have you taken away from Donnie Kelly as a manager so far?
So when a manager gets changed, but nothing else really gets changed, right? There's no big roster moves. There's no big front office moves, anything like that. The question is always, you know, how much is actually going to change? And with what Donnie's been doing, it kind of seems like just the message is clear. You know, the message is we are going to go out and play hard and continue to play hard and make mistakes sometimes because of that. But, you know, we're going to continue doing that because that's how we believe we can win these games. We're seeing a lot more stolen bases late in games in high pressure situations, seeing a little bit more action in general. I think actually there was a hit and run yesterday with Oneil Cruz on first. I think it was, but it didn't matter because Triolo still second was safe anyway. But I think you're seeing with Donnie is more, it's nice to see a manager come out and just say, you know, this is what we're doing. We want these guys to be more aggressive. When IKF made the throwing error, he was asked about that back behind second base. He, you know, he made a bad throw over to first, and Donnie came out after the game and just said, "I'm not going to tell him not to do that. I want [S2] Yeah. [S1] Him to do that." And I think that that kind of standing behind your players through the mistakes and everything, I think that can be really helpful. So, what has he really changed? I don't know, but it does seem like it's a little bit lighter, if you will. I don't. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, I know. I asked Reynolds that question, and he had a similar answer. Like he said, it's hard to articulate. But I think the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa thing is interesting. Where, yeah, I mean, he said he didn't want his guys playing tentative. He wants them to try to make that play. He wants them to think that they can make every play. I like that. You know what else I like, Steven, is the way he's used Alexander Canario. And you're not, you know, dropping him in for one game, sitting him for three, dropping him in, sitting. Like, no player on the planet can get into a rhythm like that, but they've just stuck by him. They've played him a lot. What have you made of how they've used Canario and just, you know, maybe where can this go?
So I always think that a guy who's got a lot of swing and miss, you're really going to get the most value out of them if you play them every day. That's how it works. Because if they're only going to get at bats every now and then, you know, you play once every 4 or 5 days. Let's say you go 0-for-4, and now you got to wait 4 more days. That doesn't help, obviously, any hitter. But guys who swing and miss a lot, it's hard to get a consistent approach. And Canario, I think that was his problem. I think it's the same problem that Michael A. Taylor had last year. I think a guy like that who they're going to go through bad stretches. But you have to suffer through the bad stretches because over 162 games, they'll end up giving you some really nice numbers. And I think that that's what Canario can be. I don't think he's ever really gotten that opportunity. But if you watch his swing, I mean, you put Starling Marte video right next to it and find me 5 differences in those pictures. It's really hard to do. And he's very athletic. He's really strong. You're okay with the swing and miss, especially because he's been showing recently that he's, you know, able to change that approach with 2 strikes. But I think you're right. All of that really comes from being able to play every day so you can make those little adjustments. Some guys are really good off the bench. Some guys are not going to be good off the bench. I don't think Canario is ever going to be a Matt Stairs type of guy. But I think if you play him every day, he could be a very solid everyday regular, especially if his defense, you know, keeps improving the way it seems like it has recently.
Fan Evening Show chatting with former Pirates pitcher and current Pirates broadcaster Steven Brault. Steven, the Michael A. Taylor comparison is a good one, and I think that's interesting. We've seen similar stuff with Taylor, Rowdy Tellez, other guys who have kind of been in and out of the lineup. Do you think that that has maybe contributed to guys not getting comfortable, where they're not getting regular reps and just some guys need that?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think it's the same thing with pitchers, you know, who have been starters their whole lives and get brought up as a reliever. I think that's really, really hard to do, but we just saw Braxton Ashcraft do it flawlessly in his major league debut. But I think that there's, you know, sometimes there's a mentality shift. People think they have to be something different if they're only playing once every 4 days on the defensive side. Because think about it, if you're only playing that one day, it's like, well, I got to get my hits today. I got to get my stolen bases today. Whatever it is that you do, you can't say, all right, over this next 2 weeks, I'm going to be able to put numbers together. No, I have to do it all right now. Otherwise, I'm not going to play again. So yeah, I think that can really, that can definitely make things difficult. And for a guy like Canario, like I said, he's got a lot of swing and miss. You want him taking and seeing as much live pitching as possible, I think, for him to make the adjustments to be able to hit those balls that are down the middle, which is exactly what Henry Davis has been doing too. It's not necessarily about changing some big thing in your swing. It's about changing your approach and realizing what pitches you can actually hit well. And I think that's hard to do if you're not playing every day.
I did want to ask you a little bit about Paul Skeens. And I wanted to ask it this way. You were a guy, I remember at the tail end of your career, you got to a point where you would throw a fastball like all the time because guys couldn't hit it and you would just feed fastballs. Here's this dude throwing like 6-7 pitches. As a pitcher, how hard is it to maintain that many different weapons?
You know, we talk about that a lot in baseball. In my part of the world when it comes to baseball, all my friends, we always talked about you want to make sure that the pitches you're throwing, whatever you're throwing, are one, all useful. You have a reason that you like to use them. It's not just, oh, I also want a cutter to be able to throw it. No, you have to be able to justify why you want to throw that pitch. But then the other part of it is that the pitches cannot bleed into each other, because then you end up with one pitch in the middle of a curveball and a slider instead of, you know, two completely distinct looks for a hitter. And Paul Skeens is on a different level. He can do that. He can do that with 7 different pitches, and he can also do it while throwing 100 miles an hour and spotting up. That's just, I mean, it is a different kind of beast you're seeing out there. I mean, he leads Major League Baseball in innings. I believe Zach Wheeler is pitching right now and could overtake him, but he's been so consistent this year, even though it was a quote-unquote slow start for him to the year. We didn't actually see him last year before that time. So this year in the big leagues, he gets up to that mid-May level where he came up last year, and now he's looking as dominant as ever. And I can't imagine what we're going to see the rest of the season. But, yeah, if you can throw that many pitches the way he does, I mean, go for it. Absolutely. Throw more pitches if they're all good pitches. It's just a lot of times people end up throwing a worse, you know, they throw a slider even though their sweeper is way better just because somebody told them it would help them. I think Skeens develops these pitches because he genuinely believes and knows when he's going to want to use them, and it's worked out pretty darn well.
Joined on this Fan Evening Show by Stephen Brault, Pirates broadcaster, former Pirates pitcher. Last question for you, Stephen, and this was being talked about online a little bit with Braxton Ashcraft's debut and Hannah Mears interviewing his parents and these sort of moments. Do you remember your MLB debut? Were your parents interviewed? What was that like?
Yes, my parents were interviewed, and I'll tell you exactly what it was like, Jason. They asked my dad something about pitching in the big leagues, and my dad responded, well, he was actually always a better hitter than he was a pitcher, which is like a good compliment. But also, you know, it's like, but I am pitching now, you know, in the major leagues. So, but no, it was great. I actually know for a fact that at least my mom is listening right now. So hi, Mom. But it's, you know, it was amazing to get to see my parents get interviewed. I know, I mean, they've been there for me the whole time. Every time I watch parents get interviewed, it makes my heart happy because I remember how happy it made me when I went back and watched my debut and saw my parents getting interviewed on TV. It's such a cool experience. I always love it for parents. It's always tough when the debut doesn't go well. And then the parents, you know, obviously they're still very happy to be there, but there's a little bit of a more somber tone to it. But luckily things went all right for me in my debut. So it was amazing. I'll never forget it. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Stephen Brault, thanks so much. I appreciate it. When are you back?
I'm back tomorrow, baby. Late night. Let's stay up super late together and watch the Pirates beat the Padres.
I will be there.
At 9:40 tomorrow night.
Oh,
we're still doing a post game after the show, just for all you late night people.
I'll be there. I'll be watching you. Thanks, brother. You're a
all
treat.
Right, man, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, later on. Stephen Brault, one of the all-time greats. You won't find a nicer person, more entertaining. He's doing the broadcast stuff now. If anybody has not caught on to that. And he's doing an absolutely incredible job. And I love Brault's approach to it. Had him on. I have a podcast, Post-Gazette, called Saturday Conversations, and we catch up with various people, former athletes and people in the media market about their process and that sort of thing. And I couldn't wait to have Steven on. I've talked to him about this, about how he's transitioned over to this side. And there's a lot of people that, you know, just kind of take for granted that they're a professional athlete and they can do whatever they want and people should, you know, give them whatever job that they want. And that's the exact opposite approach that Brault has taken. You might know Brault's story from what's been written about, but he also doesn't want to be a typical post-playing color commentator, which I think is even more respectable. He wants to be a play-by-play voice. I remember at the winter meetings a couple years ago, him telling me he wants to get to a point where they know him as Steven Brault, the play-by-play man. And, oh yeah, he played a little bit too. And I have no doubt that he'll get there. He started learning how to call games. He would just cue up a game and mute the sound from MLB.TV. And he would learn about the teams and would keep score and work on his calls and all of the nuance. And he'd record it. And he'd do at least one game a day. And then he'd go back and sort of review himself. And he had friends in broadcasting and people he'd get to know and send him his tapes and saying, like, where can I get better? Where can I get better? Where can I get better? So it's very cool. I think he's fantastic on Sportsnet Pittsburgh and obviously a lot of great insight there. I actually want to talk about something that Steven said specifically. It's what I went back at him with following up about the comparison with Michael A. Taylor and some issues that the Pirates have had bringing in guys and igniting offense. I think Steven might have been articulating something there that's important that I, on this side, did not completely grasp. We'll pull at that a little bit when we get back. The Fan text line's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Fan Twitter, it's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Again, wading into the waters of why the Pirates haven't been able to find offense from outside sources. There might be a reason. We'll get into that next Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, and thank you so much for finding us. Thank you to Steven Brault for joining us there. What a lovely interview. Brault, again, is fantastic, and I really appreciated a lot of his insight. We'll get into them in just one second as we transition to a little bit of Pirates talk. One bit of news, I think it's going to be applicable to the Penguins and Penguins fans as they're in the middle of a coaching search. Lane Lambert is going to be the new head coach of the Seattle Kraken. So that takes a name off the board. Lambert was not anybody the Penguins were seriously considering, but it does mean that the Seattle Kraken is not hiring Mitch Love, DJ Smith, Jay Woodcroft, any of the Penguins candidates. Going to get into that in a little bit. We are winding down on the search, the final days of it. Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now will be here at 9 o'clock to talk about that. Anyway, Fan Hotlines presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And also the 2025 Fan 5 Alarm T-shirts, they're available online. Go to KeystoneCustomApparel.com and get your commemorative shirt. A portion of proceeds benefit local volunteer fire departments. All right, so a couple Pirates storylines I wanted to wade through, and Steven Brault brought up one of them that I think warrants discussion, and I thought it was really interesting. So the Pirates have found success with Alexander Canario under Don Kelly, using him differently. And he's really found some traction by being in the lineup every day. And it's been about 20 games. And I'm not pretending that everything is solved. 20 games in the scope of a baseball season really isn't all that much. But there has been an uptick in his play, and I think it sort of creates a larger discussion about how the Pirates have utilized players. And I'm curious, and Steven thought that these two link up, and I think they probably do. The Pirates' inability to find offense externally, and even the Pirates' inability to find offense internally within players they develop and bring up through their system, how much is that tied to usage? How much is that tied to always having a changing lineup? How much is that tied to constantly wanting to play matchups, using analytics? It's a very, very big discussion. Because the Pirates offensively, under Derek Shelton and Ben Cherington, they were the worst offense in baseball. If you look it up, since 2020, nobody has scored fewer runs than the Pirates. I believe that stat is still true. The worst, maybe there's one team that has scored more runs than the Pirates. They've had repeated issues. And whether we're talking about internal solutions, maybe it's, you know, trades that they've made, guys they've brought back, they've tried to bring them up through the system. They haven't panned out. Draft picks, maybe it's a free agent acquisition. Doesn't really matter. It's run the gamut. And so why? You know, we look at Andy Haynes and the passive approach, stuff that was criticized last season. And I don't think it was all Andy Haynes, but he was certainly a part of it. It was more the overarching team philosophy toward offense. And yeah, they were too passive. They thought too much. I was on with the PM team this afternoon. We were talking about swing adjustments. This was something brought up, by the way. I was looking this up. I met the text Pony. He asked me about Nick York. And I guess Keith Law from The Athletic said something about Nick York has had a swing decision that has, you know, put his career in like an irreparable spot. You should maybe pump the brakes on that one. Nick York, over his first 19 games this season, hit .214 with a .635 OPS. Nick York, over his past 21, he's hit .325 with a .779 OPS. I'm not saying Nick York is the second coming. He might be good, he might not. But last 21, hitting over .300, I'm not sure that's his career veering off the rails. Anyway, so the Pirates, for years, have struggled to improve their club offensively. I can't help but wonder how much of that has been tied to the inconsistent usage of players. You know, on a spreadsheet, or if you look at baseball from a mathematical perspective, yes, it makes sense. This guy hits lefties at this clip. This guy hits righties at this clip. Let's put this together like a puzzle, and it's going to work out, right? Not always. Not always. And that's the beautiful thing about baseball. And that's what we're seeing with Canario. Play more, get comfortable. Play more, you don't have to worry about getting all of those hits, all those RBIs, all that damage done all at once. Play more, relax. The Pirates have done this with a number of guys. You know, Rowdy Tellez was brought in here. He never panned out, obviously booed quite a bit, and was basically a platoon player. He and Connor Joe didn't really work out great for either one of them. I'm not sure anybody got fully comfortable. Yasmani Grandal didn't catch a ton. Who knows if that had an effect on him? He might have just been winding down. But all throughout this regime, we've seen changing lineups. We've seen platoons. We've seen bouncing around. We've seen versatility. We've seen all these things that the Pirates value. What we haven't really seen much is continuity or just leaving the heck alone. And I wonder about the value there. I wonder how much we're seeing with Canario. And maybe there's some lessons there. I think if you look at a guy like Tommy Pham, they signed him this offseason for a little over $4 million. It's probably a lost cause at this point. I'm not sure what you do with Tommy Pham, especially if Canario's hitting. Like, he's probably your fourth outfielder. And you're just going to have to get used to that. Because right now the Pirates need offense. Canario's producing. And you're not going to take Brian Reynolds or O'Neill Cruz out of the lineup. So the best you can do is give him fourth outfielder reps. Or maybe you DFA him and send him on his way. You still got to pay him. I'm not sure. I think you've given him enough runway to try to turn his season around. Hasn't really happened. It's hitting .220 and some change. Something like that. But that's the opposite end. Tommy Pham finds himself in an inconsistent role, and there's really not much he or the team can do about it. Henry Davis is probably a victim of that too. Henry Davis has gotten sporadic playing time. Joey Bart was the starter. I understand a little bit more why the Pirates proceeded the way they did with Joey Bart. He earned that. Again, the Pirates need offense. He had an OPS, I think it was exactly 800 last year. Of course, you're going to play that guy. But what does that do for everybody around them? Right now, we're seeing Henry Davis getting consistent playing time, and darn it if he's not doing something with it. The idea of consistent playing time, I would argue, means more in baseball than it does most other sports. And this group, I think, is showing a bit of a flaw in that it didn't value that as much as it valued things like matchups. You know, what a analytically driven strategy might tell you. Whereas on the field, valuing the people playing the game, it's a little bit different. And I like that Donnie Kelly's brought that back. I think the best managers in baseball are kind of the Don Kelly mold. I wrote this when the Reds were in town and we had a chance to talk to Terry Francona. Terry Francona understands the numbers and analytics and stuff behind baseball. All of it's good. Even if you're talking about, I don't know, launch angle or exit velocity, you can go down a rabbit hole and get really complicated with things. But, I mean, all of that is, it's putting a label on stuff that we've known for years. And you should use it. You should use it to inform thinking. Teams get in trouble when they use it to dominate their thinking. It should always be a part of the discussion, not all of the discussion. And I think Donnie Kelly is kind of wired that way. It's never going to be all of one thing. You have to use a little bit of that, and you have to balance it with a little bit of old school feel. And I'm glad to see that the Pirates have returned to doing a little bit of that under Donnie Kelly. All right. I want to keep going a little bit with the baseball talk. I want to get into some future questions with the Pirates. We're going to play GM a little bit. I also want to reflect about O'Neal Cruz. Noah Hyles has a weekly mailbag, and there were some good questions in there, and I'm going to, no shame, kind of poach some of them. We're going to talk about the perception of O'Neal Cruz and his struggles. We're also going to talk about what happens to Joey Bart when he gets back, and what the heck can the Pirates do, what should they do with Jared Triolo. We'll get into all of that in a little bit. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, Sports Radio, 93.7 The Fan. And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, here with you until 10:35 tonight. Thanks so much for finding us. Really, really appreciate it. Been a fun show so far. Joel Nelson producing Behind the Glass. I'm watching the Pacers and Knicks now. The Knicks lead the Pacers 39-32. There's 7:54 left in the second quarter. This is fun, Joel. I can get into this stuff, man. Joel got me hooked on the NBA tonight.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And so in this segment, I wanted to get into a little bit of Pirates, but first have a call from Chris in Cranberry. He wants to talk about the Pirates' spending habits. This should be fun. If you have a call and want to talk about anything, 412-928-9370, we're here. What's up, Chris? You're on the Fan.
Well, I hear what you're saying about allowing a runway for younger players to play, but they should have supplemented. I mean, I'm not asking them to spend $40, $50 million in the offseason, but coming into the season with Tommy Pham as your starter in left field and a guy that has a chronic wrist injury at first base and McCutchen as your DH, I just, like, if you could have treaded water and spent a little bit of money, I'm not saying a ton, just spend what the Brewers spend what the Reds spend, and got a couple of guys that could be everyday players and supplemented until the guys that are coming up now and the guys that are playing every day and the guys that are starting to hit like a Henry Davis, Nick York, Andy Rodriguez. If you could have treaded water until these guys were ready, you could have had a special season. They have a $250 million player in O'Neal Cruz. They have probably a half a billion dollar player in Paul Skeens. And all they had to do was supplement until the rest of the players were ready and the cavalry arrived, and they refused to do it. I don't, and again, I'm not asking them to spend $1 trillion here. Just supplement until the cavalry arrives, and they refuse to do it. I don't understand it. I don't disagree with you, Chris. I just don't get it. So you came into the season with Tommy Pham and Jared Triolo as your first baseman, and you're shocked by a lack of production on offense? Somebody has to explain to me.
Well, I think people are shocked that it's this bad. I don't think anybody expected them to be really good. I don't think anybody expected them to be this bad.
Did you think Jared Triolo was that good?
I mean, I didn't think Jared Triolo would be playing as much as he is.
Well, who is going to play at first base?
Well, I mean, when are we talking here? Initially, it was Spencer Horwitz in spring training. Okay,
he had a chronic wrist injury. So yeah,
okay, I'm. There are different stages of the offseason where we knew about that. That's all I'm saying.
And Tommy Pham in left field. I think McCutchen has been better than I expected him to be as a DH. You came to the season with McCutchen as your DH, and I think he's if anything, these guys are overachieving. I just don't get it. I don't understand how you had O'Neal Cruz and Paul Skeens, and you spent nothing. And again, I'm not expecting them to spend $1 trillion here. Just spend something. Just get legitimate major league hitters to man first base, left field, second base. Adam Frazier? I mean, what did you think he was going to hit?
Yeah.
300?
Yeah.
400?
All right, I'm going to talk now. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call. Yeah, the Pirates' payroll increased by $2.3 million. And you know, a lot of what he was talking about, you've got Skeens. Cruz was not this version of Cruz in the offseason, so let's not pick that because it's just convenient. I mean, O'Neal Cruz was a thought. Maybe he was going to be something. Maybe he wasn't. I don't think we expected it to look like this. It's great that it does. I don't think anybody would have called O'Neal Cruz a $250 million player, you know, 6 months ago. But hey, we're here. He's been really good. And I look at what the Pirates did, and even if you would spend this amount of money, like what I said, their payroll went up $2.3 million last year to this year, and that's not enough, you know, for where they're at. I'm not saying it is, so don't misunderstand me. But what I am talking about is the money they added, I wish they would have spent it in a different way. And what I mean by that, $19.95 million in outside salary added. To position players, that's $10.55 million. Those guys, and I wrote a column on this for the Post-Gazette, this was as of May 19th, so 10 days ago. They had spent $10.5 million on position players who had netted a -6 wins above replacement mark, according to FanGraphs. Obviously, that's horrendous. I don't understand why you don't spend what you are spending differently. And Bob Nutting, for years, has explained his baseball budget in this way, that there are separate buckets. Like, there's acquisition is the term that he used. You know, talk about players. And you can also spend on processes. And so there's a very good chance the Pirates spent a lot on processes and analytics and people behind the scenes because they felt like that was an important area to beef up. So if you take basically $20 million in player cost, and let's say they spent 10 on analytics, you're looking at $30 million. I would have rather, again, we're not even going to go beyond that $30 million mark. I'd rather you just spend it on players. And instead of breaking it down where you have a DH for $5 million, you have Tommy Pham for four and change. You have Adam Frazier for basically 1.5. I think there's somebody else in there I'm not thinking of, but even so, I mean, they've done this for years where they spend a little here, a little here, a little here, a little here. You know what? Don't. Your team needs a first baseman, go get a first baseman. Your team needs offense. Go get somebody who can hit the ball. And you also, in the midst of that, have to make yourself a little bit uncomfortable. One of the players I was advocating for them looking at this offseason is Paul Goldschmidt. He got $12.5 million from the Yankees. And if you have your choice between the Yankees and the Pirates, of course you're going to go to the Yankees. Everybody's going to do that. If you're the Pirates, you have to do something where you're a little uncomfortable. You have to give them a second year in that situation. You have to overpay. I've heard calls for, this was last night. I forget who called in, but they wanted, it might have even been poor Chuck in Uniontown who's, going through it. Chuck's obviously not having a great year. Poor dude. Anthony Santander ends up signing for like $95 million. Like, that's not the overpay that we can expect out of the Pirates. It would be great. I just don't think it's going to happen. The overpay for Goldschmidt, a second year at 12 and a half, that should be doable. That should be doable. It's a gamble. Maybe it doesn't work out. Goldschmidt's had a great start. I don't know where it's going to go. But that's the gamble. And that's kind of what Chris was talking about. I'd rather see them spend on players. We're not expecting anything exorbitant. You're just expecting to go into a season to feel like they actually fixed the problem. And they didn't. All right. Art and Carnegie. This should be good. Get ready, everybody. What's up, Art?
Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Look, I'm a realist. I know that Bob Nutting is never going to sell this team, or he's never going to spend money. So I have a suggestion. I have a solution to the Pirates' problems that I think will be a quicker way for them to compete for a World Series title. Their lease at PNC Park is up in 2030. We should come to an agreement with Nutting that he moves the team to Charlotte, Memphis, wherever. He leaves the Pirates' history, the colors, the stats, everything in Pittsburgh, and he takes the players and everything and goes to a different city. And then we wait a couple years and we get an expansion team with a new ownership group, because this ownership group is never going to win no matter what they do. It's like the definition of insanity. You keep doing the same things over and over again and you expect different results. Look, so just move the team. We'll take a couple years off from baseball. We'll get an expansion team. And that'll be the quickest way to winning a World Series, because the way we're doing it now and for the last 45 years ain't working. You know?
I don't, Art. I think that idea is insane.
What else can you do? Because he's not going to spend the money to win.
Well, don't support it then. I don't care. But I mean, what are you expecting? You're just going to give the team back and hope to pluck one off the tree in another couple of years? That's not how it works.
Well, no, MLB is looking to – they're looking to expand by two teams. So we just take one of those expansion teams. Why not, right? Because what we're doing currently is never – look, I'm in my mid-40s. I've seen 7 winning seasons in 44 years. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? So, what we're doing isn't working, and this owner's not going to do anything.
Right. So, how should we hatch this plan with Major League Baseball? Should somebody call Rob Manfred and say, look, we're donating our – this is like Play It Again Sports. We're going to give you our sporting equipment, and then we're going to come back in 2 years, and we're going to ask for something new.
Why not? You know, and then
because they have a whole bunch of other markets that Major League Baseball would love to go to. And they're not going to go honor the group that just said, here, take our team.
Well, we have the infrastructure and the fan base in place. Because I honestly believe that Nutting is going to move this team in 2030.
He's not.
I think by 2027, I think you're going to see – look at what they're saying. The buzzwords they're already saying. Well, we can only spend this kind of money in this market size. They're already hinting at it. If he can move this team to Charlotte – or to another city, they're going to do it.
Art,
so we might as well just let them do it.
Art, you're killing me, man. I mean, why would Bob Nutting move the team to Charlotte, which is a college sports market, by the way, without an established fan base, and then they're going to underfund or poorly operate a baseball team that they're just going to expect people to go to?
Yeah, I know a lot of people in Charlotte that would just love to have a team.
They would support a baseball team that doesn't win.
They will for at least the first 10 years, and then that'll get the heat off of Nutting. He won't be the most hated man in that city. He's the most hated man in the city of Pittsburgh.
I don't disagree with that.
You
don't disagree with that.
So, yeah. So let's
the first thing you said that I agree with.
New owners. So, all right, bud. Thanks for taking the call.
You got it. Boy, I want whatever Art was having tonight. When I get off the air, I want some, man. Let's just rehash the logic there. That was good. So somebody, I don't even know who would do this. Maybe this would somebody's gonna, hopefully they save the receipt. They're gonna take the receipt for the Pittsburgh Pirates and go to Major League Baseball and say, we want to make a return. We want to return the team, the owner, and all this stuff. And I guess we keep the colors and the players and the history. So Bob Nutting would have to move the team to Charlotte or where at Memphis, and that'd have to become something else with new history, all that stuff. And then in 2 years, 2-3 years, somebody, again, I don't know who, the unnamed individual who's not with the Pirates, because I'm assuming all of the existing personnel and whatnot would move with this team to Memphis or Charlotte, somebody would go back to Rob Manfred and say, hey, Rob, you know how we gave you a team 2 years ago? Can we have a new one? Come on, we have it here. We've got the support. We've got the infrastructure. We just need a team. You know, and I would imagine, too, Rob Manfred, as he has to routinely at MLB meetings, tell people that, you know, Montreal might not get a team, or they can't expand in the Pacific Northwest, or San Antonio, Raleigh, Nashville, all these places that are angling for teams, that they want teams. I know this because I've been at these meetings. You're not going to get one. Hang on. Pittsburgh threw its team back, and they had the receipt, and we got to provide the exchange here. Come on. I mean, I understand being frustrated. I understand being frustrated about the Pirates. Be mad about the Pirates. Be mad about nothing. Be mad about whatever. I'm just, that's not a logical answer. Like, I don't root for the Pirates to leave. I don't want the Pirates to be gone. This is too great of a baseball city. Fans are awesome here. I mean, it is miraculous that they get the support that they do. I see it on the newspaper side. We get it on the radio side. People care about this stuff. This team means a lot of things to people. It's just going to throw it away. And I don't think it's the right move for the Pirates to leave. I don't think they want to leave. All right. Bill in Greensburg wants to talk about relocating. What's up, Bill?
Hey, just what I've thought, I mean, Nutting's a billionaire, right? He's I looked it up on, you know, on the internet. They say he's worth $1 billion. He owns the team. The team's worth $1 billion. So his wealth is basically owning the Pirates. And I think that he would, when that lease is up, he would sell them to someone that wants to move them, because, you know, the small market, it's a hard place to bring a team. I mean, I was thinking maybe Montreal. You know, they got a lot larger population and stuff like that. And he might get $400 million than he would, you know, he might get $1.4 billion or something like that if he moves it to a market like that.
All right, I'm just going to cut this off now.
A market like that.
Bill, I appreciate it.
I really don't think that he has the liquid assets to get the players that we think that he should get. I just, you know, I look at...
Well, I don't think he does either.
If he's worth $1 billion and the team's worth $1 billion, that means the money he's making is what he makes on the Pirates. And that's called, you know, his profit, everything. It showed that the Pirates made $48 million last year, which was the third highest in the National League or in baseball. But the reason that was what it was because he didn't spend it all, but that's what he's making. He made, and that comes to 5.2% of a billion. So he made 5.2% of what his, you know, his billion that he has in the Pirates. I don't think that he has the cash flow that people think that he has.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bill, and I'm sorry. I got to get to a break, man. I'm sorry. We got Dan Kangurski coming up. He's already going to be late. It's supposed to be 9 o'clock, but thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yes, I do agree with that. I don't think that he makes the money that he makes. I mean, I don't have the time right now to get into the Pirates' finances and what Nutting makes and what he doesn't. I've maintained that I think it's somewhere in the middle, and that, you know, we don't truly know. Books aren't open. They're considered a private company.
it's awfully tough to act, you know, if you act like you know, trust me, you don't, unless you're, you know, in a very select group and you know what those books look like. Fan weather, it's brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal services. Chance of rain Friday afternoon in Pittsburgh. Sunny skies and temperatures in the 70s in San Diego for Pirates Padres over the weekend. Let's shift gears to a little hockey talk. Who's going to be the Penguins' next head coach? Who's most likely? We'll talk about that with Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now when we get back. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.